Okay, I call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order at 1:03 PM. We are in Capitol Room 124. Present today is Representative Sadler, Representative Wright, Representative Rauscher, Representative Mears, Representative Dibert, Representative McCabe, and myself, Chairman Tom McKay. We have a quorum to do business, and we will be talking about a couple bills today. I'd like to thank the staff, Zach and Justin, and committee aide Ed King for helping us keep the meeting organized today. Please silence your cell phones. And, excuse me, yes, Jenny, Representative Armstrong is on by telephone. Representative Armstrong, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Thanks.
Okay, if you ever get to the point where you can't hear us or have a question, be sure to let us know. Okay, With that, we have two items on today's agenda. First, we will get an introduction of HB 83, House Bill 83. Then we will bring House Bill 49 back for public testimony. So regarding House Bill 83, reestablishing the Citizen Advisory Council on Federal Areas, more commonly known as COCFA. I will now bring House Bill 83 before the committee. This is our first hearing on House Bill 83. So, Representative Rauscher, I'd ask you to please go to the testimony table with your staff and introduce the bill to the committee.
Well, thank you, Chairman McKay and the members of the Resource Committee for hearing this bill. I appreciate it. House Bill 83 reestablishes the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska, otherwise known as CACFA, which sunsets in 2021 and sets a new sunset date in June 30th, 2031. The commission is made up of 10 public members, one senator, one representative who represent the diversity of users and users of federal land in the state and are appointed by the governor and the legislature. CACFA was first established in 1981, shortly after Congress passed the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, otherwise known as ANILCA. Comprehensive legislation governing all federal public lands in the state under the balanced compromise Congress crafted in ANILCA, 104 million acres on top of the 104 million acres already set aside, were set aside in permanent federal ownership as conservation system units, parks, preserves, wildlife, refugees, wilderness areas, and the like, while at the same time enabling Alaskans to maintain their traditions, accommodate social and economic needs of the state, provide a large range of land use and land access rights, safeguard opportunities for responsible resource development, and facilitate continued improvements in transportation and utility infrastructure. The provisions of ANILCA, both those of the Alaska Statehood Act and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, otherwise known as ANCSA, mean that most Alaskans are regulated under a unique and extremely complex regulatory web. For the decades that CACFA operated, it was an independent and impartial source of information and center for advocacy on statehood. ANCSA and the ANILCA issues that impact all Alaskans. CACFA helps Alaskans navigate complex regulations, works with federal agencies to ensure congressional intent was implemented with the respect to Alaska's interests. Among many things, the commission holds hearings to collect public comment on decisions that affect them, disseminates information about historical and new regulations to the public, the executive branch, the legislature, and monitors the federal registry, and regularly submits written comment in response to actions that affect Alaska and helps Alaskans navigate federal permitting processes. While the state's ANILCA program and CACFA both monitor federal actions, CACFA is the only entity that represents the views of Alaskan citizens concerning federal land management and plans within the state. The last state audit conducted in 2020 concluded that there is a continuing public need for the commission. As time passes, institutional memory and ANILCA expertise is lost at both the federal and state level. An active CACFA is critical to ensure that the critical knowledge is preserved, remains accessible to Alaskans, and can be used to defend Alaska. Furthermore, without CACFA, there's no organized center through which individuals can channel their concerns to the higher levels of government, making important land use decisions that impact them. CACFA is an essential tool to ensure that Alaskans have a strong and powerful voice in what happens in our state. I'm going to turn this over to my staffer, Ryan McKee, to bring you up on the sectional and introduce any invited testimony.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McKee, please proceed.
Thank you, Representative. For the record, my name is Representative George Rauscher, District 29. I apologize.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher. Okay, thank you. Mr. McKee, please continue.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. So Section 1 amends AS 44.66.010A, creating a new subsection 15, which reestablishing the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska and setting a new sunset date of June 30th, 2031. Section 2 amends AS 44.66.010A. This is a technical change, removes subsection 10, where CACFA's previous sunset date, June 30th, 2021, was listed. Section 3 incorporates transition language to the uncodified law of Alaska, establishing the initial term lengths of new appointments to the commission. Thereafter, the term limits outlined in the commission's statute will take effect. And then finally, Section 4 sets an effective date of July 1st, 2023. And that's the end of the sectional. And then we have other invited members who'd like to give testimony.
Okay, are there any questions from the committee on what's been presented so far? Very well. Thank you, gentlemen. According to my list, we have three individuals that are testifying today on HB 83. First is Mr. Rod Arno. Mr. Arno, would you like to come forward, state your name and affiliation, and provide your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Rod Arno. I live in Palmer, Alaska, and I have was a commissioner appointed to CACFA by the late Senator Lyda Green in 2007, and I was on the commission from then until 2016. So just my experience, you know, on CACFA was also before that I was executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Council, and I lobbied for the Alaska Outdoor Council since the early 90s. And a lot of the efforts that we spend for Alaskan residents is to be able to have comments on federal land management programs. We've got the BLM, the Park Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and every year they're doing resource management plans. And in those plans, then for the public who accesses federal lands, is really important to have a venue where we could have the managers of these federal lands come together, in front of the commissioners, who were all volunteers, so didn't get any pay for that. And what we would do is we provided, with CACFA, provided the opportunity for Alaskan residents to have a contact point. So individual Alaskans who access federal public lands, which is over 60% of the state, and commercial operators who trap and hunt and fish and lodge owners, that CACFA provided an opportunity for those folks to have a forum to come to the commissioners, and then having the federal land managers also in the room, we were able to discuss and work out, you know, a lot of the conflicts that then never came to, you know, having to be litigated against or having Alaskan losing an opportunity. And one of the other things that's really important, and as Representative Rauscher commented on, was the importance of making sure that the access provisions in the NELCA were followed by the federal land managers. And there's numerous areas in Alaska where there are federal lands, national parks, refuges that have inholdings. And the majority of those inholdings are lands that were part of the Angska lands to Alaska corporations and villages. And a number of the cases we had were folks who had inholdings in the national park lands, and to make sure that they would have the guarantees that NELCA gave them to that access. That was extremely important. And while CACFA was operating, that the commissioners had an opportunity to go out into the public. We held meetings in rural areas. We held them in urban areas. And so we made ourselves available. And also then there were a number of projects we worked on. And that, I don't know if any of you have ever seen this publication from CACFA, but what it is, it's the recommended petition by the state of Alaska to Congress and the executive branch as far as what to do, you know, with the transfer of the management authority on those federal lands. And this was presented to the legislature by the executive director. We had only two executive directors for CACFA since the 80s, and both of them did an excellent job. We had Stan Lephart and Sarah Taylor, and both of them, you know, just for the little amount that they were paid, the contact that they had and their ability to talk to those federal agencies to try to resolve some of the conflicts, I think was good for Alaska's citizens, as well as good for coordinating with the federal land managers. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Arno. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Arno? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Arno, help the committee understand, you've hinted at some stuff. What would the general public of Alaskans most see the benefit of having CACFA? Is there a landmark case or landmark issue that most Alaskans would say, hey, I'm glad that happened, but not know that CACFA was a participant in that issue?
Yeah, through the chair, Member Sadler. I guess one of the things that we were always the most proud about was that we were able, with our congressional delegation, to get a local hire for different land agencies. And that was something that we were trying to get folks who lived out on those federal lands the opportunity to be the first hires in the agencies. And that was blocked until we worked with Senator Murkowski and we got that lifted.
Okay. Another question?
Follow up?
Through the chair, Mr. Arnold. You know, we in the Capitol here have our exceptions with the federal government. And from your service on CACFA and anything else in your experience, would you characterize the federal government agency's attitudes towards ANILCA to help us understand the need for CACFA? Or is the federal government adhering to, do they understand and know about and recall ANILCA?
Through the chair, Member Sadler. Boy, that's well documented that there's a number of federal court cases where we've tried to work, you know, our way after not being able to work with the agencies who have a you look at their rulemaking, and more they're taking over the state's ability to manage. The latest one out from the National Park Service is for Park Service and preserved lands. And in that, the first thing you hear in the public is, well, they're going to ban bear baiting. Well, you know, bear baiting is one small piece of it, but more importantly, what Park Service has come out and said is that we're not going to do any predator-prey management. So we're going to go ahead and give a subsistence priority to hunt and fish, but we're not going to allow any predator-prey management that would increase the harvestable surplus on those federal lands. So that's kind of like an empty promise of subsistence if you're going to let those populations fall back to low-level equilibriums that clearly we see without management. So, yeah, it's in this latest rulemaking, it's perfectly clear who the Park Service has listened to. We've got examples that, well, back in 2015 to go ahead and on the Kenai to take over the management there, they say like 70,000 comments were in favor of banning bear baiting and management. And of that 70,000, 99.9 of them were not residents of Alaska. So then when we were able at the end of in the Trump administration in 2020 to reverse that, then there was another 35 comments that, you know, opposed reversing that rule. And Park Service in their recent rulemaking says, well, clearly, you know, we're following the mandate of the nation. And I find that pretty hard to believe with 70,000 comments one time, 35,000 the next time, that they perceive that as that the nation does not agree with hunting for a food source.
Okay, another question, Representative Sadler.
Last one in series, sir. And if you would, through the chair, Mr. Arnold, looking ahead, what kinds of issues do you see down the road that if should we reinstate CACFA, this commission would be useful in advocating for Alaska's interests relative to the federal government?
Yeah. Through the chair, Member Sadler. I think the biggest thing would be access. That we've got, there's over 20,000 miles of RS-2477s, the old mining trails. And when we see, you know, I've had the opportunity of being in a number of small villages, and you see that, okay, the expense of getting supplies in there, the expense of getting out for medical conditions, that the more access that we can get, and they don't have to be on those RS-2477s, it doesn't have to be a completely paved highway. It could just, you know, it could be a winter road. It could be an ice road. But every time, you know, that we're trying to get a little more access, even for snow machines and being able to have signage. So, you know, the latter part of, you know, my time on CACFA before it was went sunset, that was one of the big issues. And I've continued pursuing that with the Outdoor Council, is trying to make sure that the guarantees that were given in ANILCA for access are adhered to.
Okay, Representative McCabe.
Thanks, through the chair, Mr. Arno. I appreciate your testimony. I appreciate you being here and spending the time to come here and talk about this. There's a pretty big fiscal note on this, big for a conservative. Would you say, in your opinion, that the money is better spent on the front end, mediating, negotiating, getting citizens collected, and talking to the federal government than it is spending it for lawyers and court case and travel to Washington, D.C. and all of that sort of thing? That's a softball leading question. I get it, but I want to get it on the record. Okay.
Through the chair, Member McCabe. Yes. When you consider the expense and the expense even that the Outdoor Council's already put in litigation and amicus, you know, what they're asking for on the funding of this is small. And I would think that all of the, you know, my time on CACFA, the things that the executive director was able to work with the individual Alaskan and the agency. There was a number of things that did not have to get to litigation, and that certainly helped the individual and helped the state. So if we could find another executive director that's as competent as the last two, it would, for this small amount of money, I think that that'd be money that the state spent that'd be well spent.
Follow up.
Thank you, sir. And through the chair, just really one more question. But this board has been sunset almost 2 years ago now. And would you say, in your opinion, because I know you watch it through the Outdoor Council, and just because you are who you are, the federal government overreach or has increased without the sort of the barrier of CACFA and the citizens that supported CACFA and were there for the, to me, it just seemed like a wall, and you guys were there and we could sort of depend on you. And now it seems like without you there that this, I mean, whether it be the Lower Cusco or, you know, the game management units or national parks on the Kenai. I mean, I've just seen a large number of things in the past couple of years. And seems to me, but I'd like your opinion on whether or not you think the federal government overreach has increased in the last 2 years.
Yeah, through the chair, Member McCabe, without a doubt, yes. Since the beginning of the Biden administration when he took office, it's been a direct, assault on Alaska and on all of the land management plans that we comment on and were able to have CACFA coming on, and then they had the advantage of having the Department of Fish and Game and DNR and DOT help with those comments. Well, now with CACFA gone out of there, I can do what I can by getting a hold of commissioners and their staff, but, I don't have that source. So, has it gotten worse by the feds? Absolutely. Is the state's ability to stop some of that from happening diminished without CACFA? Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Arno? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Arno, very much for being here today. We really appreciate your testimony.
Thank you for hearing it.
We will now go to Ms. Tina Kooning by telephone, I believe. Ms. Kooning, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, and it's Tina Cunning. Can you hear me okay?
Sorry about that, Tina. Yeah, I can hear you very well, and we have you down as an ANILCA expert. So please proceed with your testimony. We'd appreciate hearing it.
Thank you, and I appreciate this opportunity to testify in support of CACFA's reauthorization. I worked in the state's ANILCA program from its inception in 1981 for nearly 30 years in the implementation of ANILCA. And since retiring in 2010, I'm part of a team that conducts ANILCA training. And if you recall, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 called for study of federal lands in Alaska to set aside 80 million acres in special conservation units. And for 9 years, there was considerable angst all across Alaska about what would be in the final D2 bill, as it was called then. The Alaska legislature and governor worked with a broad representation of rural residents, businesses, communities, Alaska Federation of Natives, and industry to adopt a bottom line, a list of 7 consensus points for Alaska. Negotiations in Congress led to bipartisan adoption of ANILCA in 1980 that included numerous protections for the traditional way of life and uses of federal lands that was in that consensus list. In 1981, the Alaska legislature established CACFA so that Alaskans could be kept informed as ANILCA was being implemented and to protect public uses of federal lands as Congress had directed in ANILCA. CACFA was invaluable in helping individual Alaskans work through federal requirements, such as commercial permits for air taxis, sled dog tours, hunting guides, access to inholdings within these large units, cabins for subsistence. And in the 40-plus years since passage of ANILCA, most Alaskans and government employees have forgotten the special provisions for public uses that the governor, Alaska legislature, ANCSA corporations, rural residents, Senator Stevens, and Congressman Young fought so hard for. And most Alaskans do not read the Federal Register every morning with their coffee. But that is exactly what the CACSA executive director did in order to watch for actions that impacted ANILCA's implementation on Alaska residents. Without CACSA, there is no one to help Alaskans navigate red tape or appeal decisions when a federal manager simply says no. In contrast, the state's ANILCA program cannot help individual Alaskans. It coordinates with federal agencies to defend interests of the state agencies in federal plans, regulations, etc. But I can recount examples of being told by a state political appointee to not defend a specific Alaskan right in ANILCA because the administration didn't support those provisions. As an independent commission, administrative politics could not interfere with CACSA's defense of individual Alaskans' rights or other provisions adopted by Congress at ANILCA. The Alaska legislature was wise in establishing the Citizens Forum to help Alaskans meet their social and economic needs promised in the final deal Congress adopted. But in every passing year without CACSA, this results in lost opportunities for Alaskans, and local conflicts over uses go unresolved. I strongly support reauthorization of this independent commission for the benefit of all Alaskans in implementing ANILCA as Congress intended. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tina Cunning. Are there any questions for Ms. Cunning? Representative McCabe has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Cunning. If you have that testimony written out, if you could email it to us, to the committee, I think that would be extremely helpful. I appreciate you spending the time to talk today.
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Ed, maybe you can give me that email address just so we have it. Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Ms. Cunning, I'm going to ask you the same two questions I asked Mr. Arno, those being, first, what issues do most Alaskans appreciate that the CACFA achieved that they might not know the CACFA participated in? And second, what issues in the near short-term future would CACFA be beneficial in working on should we reauthorize it? So looking to the past and looking to the future.
Well, there are many, many examples of where CACFA was able to help an individual guide or operator or trapper in getting their permits. And there are just hundreds of them. And I think if you look at the audit report that you have in your packet, they documented what had been done during the last few years of CACFA's existence. But there are many that don't get specifically documented because if an individual gets told, for example, that they can't have a cabin for trapping in some rural part of the state, and they just get told no, they don't really have any recourse because they don't know where the regulations are. They may not even really understand which agency is controlling what. So it's really hard to count how many things they protected for individual Alaskans. But they did do some bigger problems. Rod Arnold brought up the local hire provisions. ANILCA has, in 1308 of ANILCA, a specific provision to bypass the federal hiring system for special talent in local Alaska. And the agencies, federal agencies, hire hundreds of seasonal employees through that process to work in the parks and refuges in particular and the Forest Service. When a D.C. administrator canceled that local hire provision, so you had to go through the normal federal hiring, it was going to be destructive economically for many people in rural Alaska that depended on it, as well as for the federal agencies in the management of their units. So in a concerted effort, CACFA was able to get Alaskans involved, the delegation. They went back to Congress. Senator Murkowski was effective in amending that legislation to make it clear that that program stays in effect. I recall another instance where, when I was in the ANILCA team, which is now, you know, two decades ago, that I was told that The state's position on a particular management plan was not going to protect the right to build cabins for the public's uses in an area that had particularly bad inclement weather, and there had been cabins which unfortunately were being destroyed. There was not going to be an opportunity to replace those. They've been prohibited in the management plan. And because we were told in the state we couldn't say anything about it, we were just silent on it, CACFA stood up on that one and was able to work with the federal agency to recognize the provisions that were in ANILCA and be sure that that was in the final plan. As far as future issues go, there's reinterpretations of ANILCA are becoming more and more frequent, where there's not the public process that there was as when ANILCA was originally envisioned. So the federal agencies are now using online systems for taking public comment when they put out notices of changes they're going to make. And most of the time, people in the local areas are dependent upon local meetings, notices in the post office, some other kinds of information through their local communities, village councils, whatever their local administrators are, for that kind of information. And it's just not happening. So the local discussions with federal administrators are declining. And that was a role that CACFA was very effective at being sure that there were local hearings or local discussion groups. They contributed in a very positive way. This is not necessarily an anti-Fed kind of thing, but a very proactive, positive communication between locals and the federal agencies and others in the state that was envisioned in ANILCA. ANILCA is bipartisan legislation and it has a lot of requirements for consultation and coordination with various entities. And that's the part we're seeing diminish. So people are both not aware of what's happening and don't really know how to defend what should have been their rights being retained.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Cunning, Representative Sadler has another question.
Yeah, half question, half comment. I know the Alaska Public Lands Information Centers were another accommodation for Alaska that was in ANILCA, and those were joint federal state funded. Ms. Cunning, through the chair, did we make a mistake in not making sure the federal government and state government would share the cost of CACFA?
I don't think so. There would be no reason for them to. They have their... By regulation, they have their processes for taking in public comment, and there are, within their regulatory processes, ways to appeal decisions. I don't think there would be necessarily a willingness to help fund CACFA, per se.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Ms. Cunning? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Ms. Cunning, very much for your testimony. We really appreciate it today. It's very, very helpful. And now we'll move to Mr. Ted Spraker, president of Safari Club International, to please come to the table and give his name and affiliation and begin his testimony. And I should note that we do have a letter in our file, Mr. Spraker, from Mr. Sturgeon on this topic, so just so you know.
So, Mr. Chairman, good afternoon and members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify. Again, for your record, my name is Ted Spraker. I live on the Kenai Peninsula in the town of Soldotna. And I'm really appreciative of the last two people that testified. They certainly are the experts on this. I've attended a couple of these meetings in the past, and I know a little bit about the process, but I'm certainly glad I'm third to testify today and they can answer all the tough questions. So with that, I would like to present to you today, we do have a letter signed by John Sturgeon and myself in strong support of this bill, H383. Today I'm here representing Safari Club International, the Kenai chapter. We're a smaller chapter than the Alaska. We have about 150 or so members in our club. We're going to have a big banquet for a fundraiser this spring. And now that the COVID issue is over, we're looking at probably around 500 people there to contribute and hopefully collect money for conservation throughout Alaska. The Alaska chapter that we're joint with and do a lot of things with is much larger, about 600 members of their club. And when they have a banquet, they have about 900 that attend. They're going to have it on the 22nd. Hopefully we'll see some of you there. And then our banquet's on the 20th of May, 22nd of April. Ours is the 20th of May on the Kenai. I just have a couple points, but I think it's very important to know that the last two testifiers talked about access and the difficulty working with the federal system. When I worked for the Department of Fish and Game, and then later on when I was on the Board of Game, I had a lot of people come to me and ask about access. And in particular, I had a lot of trappers ask me about, well, I need to make a line cabin. I'd like to build a cabin. I've dealt with the federal government, and either they drag their feet or they just absolutely don't say no, like Tina was saying. They just say no, and unfortunately, these people kind of give it up. And, of course, the Board of Game is not the avenue for that, so we could not do anything to help them. But I directed them to this CAFTA, and, you know, despite ANILCA's protection in the use and construction of these line cabins for trappers, you know, they had difficulty getting them, but this advisory group was able to help them out. I ran into the same issue. Like I said, I live on the Kenai Peninsula. We have a 2.1 million acre Kenai National Wildlife Refuge there, and they have a lot of restrictions on snow machines. So we've had the same sort of issues with snow machine access on the refuge. But the last point I want to make, and I think this is the one that's so important, at least that our group has talked about so much, is the National Park Service rule, proposed rule. If that goes into play, then you're going to see a lot of people coming up with questions on, for instance, if you're a guide in Alaska and you have a concession, you know, guides can only have three game guide use areas. That's their maximum is three. Let's say they have two of those are on a preserve, and now they can't hunt bears, for instance, on that preserve. You know, there goes that business, that company. And I think that's going to be even a bigger issue if this National Park Service rule goes into play. And without this Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm really concerned that we're going to lose all this institutional knowledge that we just heard so much about. You know, I've read through ANILCA somewhat, and all I can tell you is you all well know it's extremely complex. And I think over time, the federal managers just do kind of what they want. And unless we take them to court and spend good tax dollars and Alaskan dollars to fight them in court, you know, they seem to do this. So I think more than ever, we need this organization. It's the go-between for the citizens, you know, to the legislature. And I think this is the time we really need to reinstate this. And thank you very much for your time.
Okay, Mr. Spraker, I have a couple questions. One is, would CACFA replace outside consultants either hired by the legislature or by individuals? And would that perhaps give them more, more power to fight some of this activity?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I think it would. You know, I think having this organization there, you know, Mr. Arnold pointed that out. Since it's been gone, you know, this federal issue has escalated. Yes, I think it would help. It probably save us some money for lawyer fees over time. I do.
Okay, and I'm not sure who this question's for. Maybe it's for Representative Rauscher, but if this bill were to pass and the governor signed it into law, How quickly could we expect to have a CACFA commission stood up and running? Not sure who to ask that to, but seems like it's fairly urgent. Yeah. If that's a relevant question, I'm just trying to get a feel for how soon we could get this up and running if it were to proceed.
Representative Rauscher, for the record, the chair, this this bill says that the act takes place July 1st of 2023, should it pass. And I would say as soon as the appointments could be made would be as soon as the committee could start up would be the answer to your question.
Okay.
And I would assume, I'm going to guess they would be relatively quickly.
Good. Okay. Okay, any questions from the committee for Mr. Spraker or Representative Mears?
Thank you. I'm assuming this is our last testifier.
Yes, on this bill, yes.
Okay, so this might have to go to Mr. Rauscher or Mr. Arno. With your previous experience, I'm just wondering if the staffing and support level for this is similar to what it was in the past.
I believe, through the chair, I mean, Representative Rausch on the record, through the chair, I believe that's what the funding for, and that will supply that also.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Sadler, you touched your mic. I was watching.
Card laid is a card played, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Through the chair to the sponsor, I was going to ask the same question, so I'm looking in the fiscal note. This is a calls for a Range 23 large project coordinator to be located in the Office of Project Management and Permitting. Can I ask, where was the, in previous incarnations of CACFA, where was the executive director housed administratively and at what range, if you know specifically?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, for the record, to Representative Seven, I'm just going to have to pass this off to probably the lady on the phone, because she might have a better idea. Maybe even Representative, maybe even Arnold Tina, which is on the phone there.
Ms. Cunning, are you still on the phone? No, she's gone.
Hello.
Oh, sorry. Okay, Ms. Cunning, we had a question from Representative Sadler. Rep. Sadler, could you repeat your question?
And that'd probably be best. Really, through the chair, Ms. Cunning, just curious, what the previous incarnations of CACFA, was the executive director at a range 23 and also housed in OPUMP, or was it someplace else at a different range?
That question is covered in the audit report. I don't know. You have another person, I think, standing by to answer questions, and one of those, that's Stan Leapark, who is the original CACFA director. He may be there. I believe it was either a 21 or a 23. When the commission was originally established, it had a much larger staff, and it was reduced over time. And when it was reinstated in 2007, it was reinstated as just the one full-time position with the ability to hire a part-time position assistant, which is pretty important. I'm looking at the I'm trying to look at the audit report here to see where it's addressed in there. But the other part of your question was where it was located. It has always been attached to DNR for administrative purposes only. DNR has no oversight over the commission. The commission members, once appointed by the governor and legislators, they hire their executive director. In the past, when they were in hiring stages, a number of us that are involved with the ANILCA training programs have come in and helped train that executive director. And since Alaska is fortunate enough to still have its original executive directors on hand, they're, I'm sure, still willing to help provide those people getting up to speed. But it is just one full-time position, and it is attached to DNR. I noticed in that fiscal note that they're using an OPUMP, OPMP, DNR, Special Project Coordinator position. I think there probably might be some discussion about how that's located and be sure that it operates independent of the agency, as a commission should.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunning. Thank you. Rep. Sadler, are you?
I just going to say I need to dive into that audit a little more deeply.
Thank you. Sure. Okay. Mr. Arno, anything you'd like to add to that question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, CACFA first was housed in Fairbanks at the DNR office, and that was the commissioner just allowed and found space for Stan Lephart there. And then it was moved, and that was under Commissioner Ed Fogles in DNR. And we found a room that wasn't being used at the Palmer Airport at the forestry offices. So it was always a matter of the commissioners working with us at DNR to find a place that we wouldn't have to have an additional expense. And the range, I think, was a 23,
according to this.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Any other questions related to this bill? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Dieberg.
Thank you. Through the chair, I don't know the history of the bill. I'm just wondering why the legislator let it go into sunset.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, Representative Dieberg. Just a clarification one more time on that question.
I think it's, we heard this last session, Representative Rauscher, but apparently it didn't make it all the way through.
That's correct.
So there's a gap.
It did sunset, so there is a gap. And so we will be picking up almost, I believe, a year later, right? We'll be 1 year now without a cap.
Does that help answer your question? No, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
You sure? Okay.
I hope I was able to answer your question. If not, I'd be more willing to talk about it.
Perfect. Yeah, so there has been a gap without any CACFA in place.
Yes. I believe it made it through the House. It sat in rules, and that's as far as it got.
Yeah, it stayed in rules last session and never made it all the way through. Okay, anything else on House Bill 83? All right, I want to thank our testifiers and Representative Rauscher for bringing this bill forward. Thank you to all of our testifiers. Let's take a brief at ease while we get set up for House Bill 49. Okay, I bring us back to order here at House Resources. I want to announce one thing. If you have any amendments for the bill we just heard, HB 83, please submit them to my office by 5 o'clock on Tuesday, March 21st. Okay. I also wanted to mention, and it's probably too late for Ms. Cunning, but any written testimony can come to house.resources@akledge.gov. Okay, we now bring House Bill 49, Version S, back before our committee. This is our fifth hearing on HB 49. My plan for today is to hear from the public, then set the bill aside. We will have a further conversation with the administration regarding this bill during our next hearing. So with that, we will open public testimony, which will all be by phone. Let's see, Representative Armstrong, can you still hear us okay?
Yep, I can still hear you.
Okay, very good. If you have a problem, just let us know. Okay, so we'll now open public testimony on HB 49. Our first testifier is Mr. Ken Huckaba. Mr. Huckaba, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, Mr. Huckaba, would you please state your name and your affiliation, and you can begin your testimony. We'll limit testimony today to 2 minutes per person.
Thank you. My name is Ken Huckaba. I represent myself. I'm from the city of Wasilla, and George is my representative. I wanted to start off. I find it disturbing that this legislation has been promoted by some legislators during the deliberation, as no representative was the author or sponsor. This bill is by the state for the state. It is sprung upon the legislature in an emergency fashion with no time for preparedness and knowledge by them. It's been often repeated that the establishment and involvement of the carbon credits by the state is completely disconnected from ESG and is not related to the World Economic Forum, who have complete cessation of fossil fuels as their stated goal. Two non-governmental organizations, ANU and VERA, were picked by this commission. Both stand to profit or gain power and influence directly in accordance with WF policy by the expansion of the fiat currency known as carbon credits. They are, in fact, listed as partners of the WF. Recent DNR Commissioner Corey Feig wrote a series of in the Petroleum News titled ESG in Alaska DNA. It would be hard to believe that these sentiments are not shared with or known by the administration. The repeated public message that this has nothing to do with ESG exhibits knowledge of how devastating and wrong ESG is for Alaska. ESG is simply a new method for socialism and Marxism that is also dedicated to the obliteration and cessation of fossil fuels, as mentioned before. Little to no mention of further legislative review, grading control, audit, or inspections mentioned in this legislation. As written, the commissioner and the director have all control and oversight, as stated. This is one exception. Carbon credit evaluations. The WF partner agencies do this. Net zero policies have little to do with the climate and all about control. Engaging in carbon trade is a grift that taxes people and companies that produce their goods and services with no added value. The Willow decision is a painful example of these policies. Extremist WF agency lawyers were enabled to delay and degrade that project by their unprecedented and mysteriously never argued inclusions in an already approved environmental impact statement.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Huckabee. That's the 2-minute warning, so we appreciate your testimony. If you would like to, you can write up your testimony and send it to house.resources@akledge.gov. Thank you very much, sir. So now we move to Cassie Andrews. Cassie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can, Ms. Andrews. So if you please state your name and your affiliation and begin your 2-minute testimony. Thank you.
Yep, my name is Cassie Andrews. I'm representing myself, and I'm from Anchorage. What was the spot price on CO2 10 years ago? This whole concept implies that there's an inherent value to CO2 when, in fact, there is not. You can't eat it. You can't smoke it. You can't use it to heat your home. You can't do anything with it. Short of the fizz in my soda or the dry ice in my Halloween punch, carbon dioxide as a commodity has no inherent net value. It is not a commodity. And this is back to basics in square one. Why are we even acknowledging that carbon dioxide has net worth? How has our supposed economic system of supply and demand, has industry placed a need or want that establishes a net value for CO2? Whose guiding principles are defining this? When you monetize CO2 and a financial transaction occurs, if you are not creating net GDP, which means growth to our economy with it, it is being subsidized from someone. That someone would be us, the taxpayers. There are other environmental projects out there, such as wind and solar, which still to this day do not stand on their own 2 feet and are continually subsidized. However, they are creating an output that...
Sorry, Ms. Andrews, you're broken up. Ms. Andrews? Awesome. Okay, Ms. Andrews, maybe we can come back to you later. Let's go to Matt Jackson. Okay, Mr. Jackson, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So please state your name, Mr. Jackson, and your affiliation, and begin your 2-minute testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Matt Jackson. I live in Sitka, and I work for Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. And we work in-depth on forest management issues in both federal and state lands in Southeast Alaska for more than 50 years. So we have a fair amount of institutional knowledge on these kind of issues. And I would agree with the governor and some of the other folks who've just called in. This bill and carbon offset programs in themselves don't have anything to do with climate change, but we do believe that it could be a useful tool for public land managers to have in their toolbox and a useful way for the state to raise revenue. And so if the committee decides to go forward with this bill, we have a couple of suggestions and thoughts we'd like to share. Some of the investments required to enter into a carbon registry, like conducting modern forest inventories or sustainable forest certifications, would be welcome and long overdue investments in our overall forest management data set. But these will be substantial investments, and I hope that committee and department staff are taking realistic looks at those costs. As far as gaining the most value from these carbon credits as possible, there's two suggestions that CF would like to make to improve the bill with a goal to maximize the revenue and the value that Alaska can receive from selling these credits. First, we would look favorably on raising the term limit to 99 years. There's no reason to tie our hands on longer-term projects. There's a premium for permanence, and longer-term projects will simply bring in more revenue. A 99-year program is much more valuable than a 55-year program. Secondly, I've been surprised to see and hear in these hearings that there's been no mention of the concept of leakage in this bill. Leakage is the industry term for when carbon that was supposed to be stored in one place leaks out due to emission-causing activities elsewhere. A good example of that would be if credits were sold for carbon stored in the Haynes State Forest, but the state replaced the reduced timber harvest in Haynes with additional timber harvest on Prince of Wales. That would be leakage. Leakage is an essential concept in carbon markets, and preventing leakage is an essential part of valuable carbon offset programs. Addressing leakage in the statute would do a lot to increase the value and increase the revenue of these potential carbon credit programs. I'd like to thank the committee and all the staff for putting all the time you invested into this bill. And if myself or CF can give further assistance in this process, we're based in Juneau, and I'd be happy to take questions or provide resources to the committee.
And thank you, Mr. Jackson, for your testimony. If you'd like to submit that in writing to house.resources@akledge.gov, we would be happy to take a further look at it.
Thank you. I'll do that.
Thank you for your testimony. I'll now go to Lydia Shoemaker. Ms. Shoemaker, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
My name is Lydia Shoemaker. I'm speaking on my behalf. I live in Wasilla. I'm going to be addressing two topics, both on page 6, the first of which is section 38.95.430. It was explained in the hearing on Monday the 13th that revenues would not be going into the permanent fund, but would go into a separate fund to pay for the expenses of this boondoggle. Although the chair chooses to hold this public testimony before receiving the updated fiscal notes, we can see that there is an expected expense to the people of $1,867,800 across the three fiscal notes. If HB 50 was any example, the fiscal notes will be walked back in order to encourage this bill to be forced through the legislation. However, if the work was put in before the bill was presented, it should be safe to assume this is an accurate cost, singularly for the one-year period of 2024. Also note there's no expected revenue presented still because this entire scheme is not unknown. There's too unknown to have accurate numbers. The second thing I'll address on page 6 is carbon offset project definition. Last Friday, we heard in testimony given by a conflict of interest that if Alaska makes it a law to manage the forest in a manner different than what we currently are, that would could disqualify us from the carbon capture market, which by definition, this bill must instill a, quote, framework legislation that does change the law as it clearly states, and I'm quoting, similar land and resource management measures that mitigate greenhouse gases by increasing the carbon stock on state land. This is placing the carbon fiat market into the law by definition as a priority, which will inherently alter the way Alaska manages the forest, which is voiding the goal of this legislation. Lastly, I'll address the points made by your own invited public testimony, which are companies that work with the World Economic Forum. The state has been in existence for 64 years, and the legislation is talking about 55 years lockup of these trees and...
Okay, thank you, Ms. Shoemaker. Yeah, thank you, Ms. Shoemaker. That's the two-minute warning. I would like you to ask if you want to submit your testimony in writing to house.resources@akledge.gov. That would be appreciated. Thank you for your testimony. We will now move to Todd Lindley. Mr. Lindley, can you hear me okay?
Sir, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
Yes, my name is Todd Lindley. I'm representing myself, and I'm calling in from Anchorage. This bill has often been referred to as the tree bill, but I think it would be better to refer to it as the density bill. Why density? Because the main metric for measuring the amount of carbon to offset will be trees per acre. The higher the density, the more carbon can be offset, setting up the framework for companies to offset their carbon emissions by leasing our forest land is saying to us, the people, that Alaska's forests are worth a certain number of barrels of oil outside of Alaska or in a foreign country. These companies need dense forests to account for the total emissions they produce. ANU, a company who has invited testimony and are a World Economic Forum partner, wrote a white paper study on Alaska's forests. They identified 300,000 acres available to perform a pilot project that the state needs to prove today. The average density is 113 trees per acre. When you convert this to barrels of oil, that means 300,000 acres of Alaskan forest land in Haines, Mattsu, and Fairbanks is worth 14,000 barrels of oil to someone else. Our forests will become an asset, and it'll be protected to be maintained on the exchange. The company that manages and sets up carbon offsets, Vera, who when asked if they were part of the World Economic Forum, committed a lie of omission. They are a World Economic Forum partner. Any legislator in the room, and certainly their staffers, could have verified this fact with a simple Google search. Did you know that they're a nonprofit incorporated in Colombia? Why is it that a foreign entity is invited testimony petitioning support for a U.S. state bill proposal? This bill needs to be removed from the ledger based on the negligence of this body to perform the necessary due diligence of the invited testimony and the intent of this legislation on land use and taxation. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lindley. I would appreciate if you could send us the title of that white paper you referred to and your written testimony, if you'd prefer, to house.resources@akledge.gov. We'd be happy to take a look at it.
Yes, sir. Will do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lindley. Now I have Mr. Bert Houtelling. Mr. Houtelling, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Mr. Houtelling, please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
My name is Bert Houtelling. I'm from Big Lake, Alaska. I represent myself, my child, and many other Alaskans that usually like to listen to what I have to say. I find it pretty disgusting to see and hearing there at the Alaska Ledge have bought into this ESG scam. How much is the WEF paying you? How much money has been taken to push this Green New Deal scam, which is destroying Alaska's economy?
Yeah, Mr. Houtelling, I'm going to interrupt you and correct you. Nobody here is taking any kind of compensation. That's frankly an absurd statement. So I'm going to have to challenge that. Please continue.
I reclaim my time that you've just taken. If only Alaska Ledge would take their horse blinders off and quit looking at the carrot the federal government keeps pushing at the end of the stick and see the pile of crap those blinders are hiding from them. The indoctrination of the WEF paid actors testifying before you in Juneau has worked. They refuse to look no further than the carrot on the end of the stick. Can't see the end game that is a decade away from being played out. What is to stop them from changing the rules of how this carbon credit is to change? It is not under the control of Alaskans. It's under the control of the WEF organization. I wish we could be more like Saudi Arabia, who was able to accomplish $161 billion in sales of oil in this last past year. Meanwhile, here in Alaska, we sold what? $14 billion? Their cost for production is only $6 per barrel. Our here in Alaska, it takes a minimum of $68 per barrel to finally see a profit. This scam will do nothing more than increase the cost of the everyday American to cover the cost of the paid for credits that these companies have had to work out on their own. And then they're going to pass that cost on to us. This needs to be an outright tabled discussion. It needs to be, bill itself needs to be put into the trash can where it belongs. we Alaskans, anybody that has taken the time to watch and listen to what is going on there in Juneau like I have, or has taken the time to actually listen to the opposition out there, which I suggest you go and watch the discussion held at the Alaska School of Government, which there are videos all over the internet to be able to discover what was said there. Maybe you folks there will be able to take your blinders off.
Okay, Mr. Hovtailing, we thank you for your comments today. They were very enlightening. And if you would like to send your written testimony to house.resources@akledge.gov, we'd be happy to look at them further. So with that, I'll move to Cara Moriarty. Mrs. Moriarty, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You know the drill, 2 minutes.
Yeah, I do know the drill. Thank you. Chairman McKay and members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Cara Moriarty. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. As you know, we represent the majority of oil and gas companies exploring, developing, producing, transporting, marketing, and refining in Alaska. Our mission is to advocate for the long-term viability of the oil and gas industry in this state for the benefit of all. We applaud the governor's initiative to continue Alaska's proud tradition of responsible and innovative resource development. AOGA does support an approach on carbon credits that will incorporate carbon offset programs into voluntary carbon reduction targets. Additionally, the final framework of a carbon offset program must be consistent with Alaska's constitutional principles and preserve access to lands for multiple use, the benefit of all Alaskans, and be maintained through future administrations. Like carbon capture and storage, Alaska is uniquely positioned to be a leader in the emerging carbon offset industry, and we do look forward to continued engagement and learning as this bill works through the process. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Moriarty, for your testimony. And like I've told everyone, if you have anything that you'd like to submit on HB 49, you can send it to house.resources@akledge.gov. So thank you for your testimony. Do we have anyone else that wants to testify? Should I go back to Cassie Andrews? Ms. Andrews, can you hear me? Cassie Andrews, are you on the line? Okay, I just wanted to be on the record that we tried to recheck with Cassie Andrews, and we're not able to reach her. If you do hear me, Cassie Andrews, you can submit your testimony in writing to house.resources@akledge.
Do you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Okay, you came back.
They have me on mute.
Oh, okay.
Like they have mute.
Okay, all right. So, Ms. Andrews, it seemed like you got about halfway through your testimony, and then it got all staticky. So we'll give you the chance to start over. 2 minutes, please.
Okay. Thank you so much. What was the spot price on CO2 10 years ago? The whole concept implies that there's inherent value to CO2 when, in fact, there is not. You can't eat it. You can't smoke it. You can't use it to heat your home. You can't do anything with it. Short of the fizz in my soda or the dry ice in my Halloween punch, carbon dioxide as a commodity has no inherent net value. It's not a commodity. Once you monetize CO2 and a financial transaction occurs, if you're not creating net GDP, which means growth to our economy with it, it is being subsidized from someone, and that someone would be us, the taxpayers. There are other environmental projects out there that, such as wind and solar, which still to this day do not stand on their own 2 feet and are continually subsidized. However, they are creating an output that society is in demand for, such as electricity, and therefore, while not economically viable, it's still defendable that it may provide inherent value. We would not be proceeding with this legislation if not for the 45Q tax credits, which are rife with fraud. It has been said by members of this legislature that the tax credit may be the single biggest incentive for companies to participate. So as a state, we paved the way to embark on yet another government subsidy where the fraud rate is 90%. The way this has been presented is that there's a framework that needs to be passed so we can move forward. This is akin to what Nancy Pelosi said when presenting the bill that pushed Obamacare through. Why would we create legislation to allow companies within our state to partake in this fraud? The other aspect of this that is highly problematic is that the people are continually lied to and gaslit on this topic. Supporters of this legislation have repeatedly spread misinformation and attempt to defend a position on what this legislation is not. Anytime legislation is debated and the defense of the bill begins in what it is not, the concept is fundamentally flawed and is deceitful at best. Claims that this is not ESG, claims that this is not a concept from the World Economic Forum have seen the light of day and have been thoroughly debunked, and I'm embarrassed for all when defending the narrative when I hear the contrary. People are not stupid. And honestly, that is what supporters of this bill are depending on.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Andrews. I appreciate your testimony. If you want to submit it in writing, you can send it to house.resources@akledge.gov. Thank you very much. Okay, I will. Is there anyone else on the line? All right, I will now close public testimony. Let's take a brief at ease. Back on the record. So thank you, everyone, for your patience today. As a reminder, please submit any amendments to HB 49 to my office by 5 o'clock tomorrow, March 16th. We will hold HB 49 in committee for further consideration. We will likely have testimony from the DNR on Friday, the 17th, and we'll look to the will of the committee on Friday, at our Friday meeting to determine our way forward. In closing, is there any other business? Seeing none, the next committee meeting will be held at 1 o'clock on Friday, March 17th. So we are adjourned at 2:18 p.m. Thank you.